Hi everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava from Nightlight Astrology, and today we are going to take a look at the return of Saturn's square with Uranus. This is the second major square between these two planets that we have this year. We're going to get one more before the end of the year, and it's being intensified by the entrance of Mars into Leo, which is going to enter right into a T-square with these other two planets in the next several weeks. So we will be unpacking this probably in another couple of videos, but today I want to warm us up and remind us of what this transit is all about. You could actually look back into my archives from around the beginning of 2021 if you wanted to kind of re-listen to the initial takes on Saturn and Uranus and kind of refresh or remind yourself of what that energy is all about. I broke down some of those archetypal combinations in ways that are going to be unique compared to what I do today. So if you really wanted a deep dive, you could go back and look at those. But at any rate, I'm going to put the real-time clock up. I also want to say a big congrats to all the people starting my new programs. We got off to a great start this weekend and really excited to be diving into a new year of astrological study. My next programs, if you missed it, my next programs begin in November, late November, early December. Usually we haven't settled on an exact date yet, but it'll be late November, early December that my next year one program begins. Also a new class called Readings and Passages, which I'll be promoing in the fall. So, and for all of you out there who are getting warmed up with all of the new, you know, the website, all the new technology, the Zoom meetings, everything like that, hang in there. We have a flooded inbox of people asking questions about how to make sure they're doing everything correctly and getting situated in the classroom. And, you know, we will make sure that everyone's set up. We've still got about a week of Mercury retrograde. So, you know, we'll straighten things out for people who are having a hard time figuring out how to log in and all that good stuff. All right. So in the meantime, what we're going to do is bring up the real-time clock and get a look at this transit. So here today, you can actually see Saturn and Uranus. And my formatting, my lines are tiny. Let's go like this. Here's Saturn and Uranus in the square with one another, 13 Taurus, 13 Aquarius. So they are meeting in that exact square today. And you'll see that if we go forward just a day from now, then although they're still at the 13th degrees, their square is passing over. So they are completing technically by tomorrow. Now that's going to be intensified by the fact that Mars in the sign of Leo is going to come in and create a T-square. It looks like a little T. So watch what happens if we just speed this up a little bit by some days. You can see that Mars in Leo is going to come in to the mix. This is late June. This is like the 26th that it starts getting into about that 3-degree range, which we call an engagement. And that energy will intensify quite a bit. You can see my screen's shifting on me a little bit, but here you go. You can see that energy playing out particularly. It's very potent June 28th, 29th, July 1st, July 2nd. It'll really cross over completely by about July 4th. So you could say between now and the 4th of July or the 5th of July, right around the beginning of July, you're seeing not only the Saturn-Uranus square, but it's being intensified by the presence of Mars. That is, I will tell you right now, this is what makes June such a powerful month. We have the solar eclipse. We have two big oppositions to Pluto, one at the beginning of the month from Mars, later at the end of June from Venus. We had a big Mercury retrograde, a bunch of squares from Mercury and the Sun and Venus to Neptune that we're passing through. And at the end of this month, you can also see one of the things that's going to happen is right as this T-square passes through, Mercury will square Neptune one last time. So it's been an interesting string of events since late May, really, when you look at the lunar eclipse that happened on May 26th, the solar eclipse on June 10th, the Saturn-Uranus square, the Mars-Pluto opposition, Mercury retrograde, on and on. It's been a big month of June. So what I want to do today is really unpack the Saturn-Mars-Uranus dynamic and what you can watch for in the weeks ahead. So in order to do that, I'm just going to pull open some of my notes here and bring them down where I can see them. So one of the, you have to remember a couple of the major archetypal themes involved with Saturn and Uranus, and then throw Mars in. Well, if Saturn is a principle of conservative, it's really a reservoir of conservative qualities: restriction, depression, limitation, isolation, withdrawal, alienation, removal, abandonment. You know, it's the wall that separates the insiders versus the outsiders, and it can as much describe someone who, is like someone who clings to power, like the old Saturn of mythology, you know, the old Kronos who clings to power and doesn't want to let anyone or anything else, anything new come into play. It's the refusal of winter to go away. You know, it's the Senex in all of the Senex rage. I'm the old person. I'm entitled to everything. And, you know, anyone new or anything young, I reject, that kind of archetypal. Not, of course, I'm not saying everyone who is older is like that, but that is like Ebenezer Scrooge, right? Kind of like a greedy, miserly hoarding of resources, resistant to change, like that. So Saturn can be like that. And on the other hand, Saturn can also describe people who are on the outside looking in. It can describe people who are imprisoned. It can describe heretics. It can describe dissidents and rebels. It can describe people who have some kind of tendency to oppose or resist the status quo, which is not always what we think about when we think about Saturn. But for example, Saturn can represent someone who is a black sheep, an outcast, misunderstood, someone who is attacked throughout their life for being different in some way, maybe because of the color of their skin or what they do for a living or whatever the case might be. So Saturn will often describe these kind of hard boundaries between who's inside and who's outside. What is the norm and what's outside the norm? So Saturn is the lord of boundaries, and Saturn is the lord of oppositions in astrology, the aspect, the opposition ruled by Saturn. And then on the other hand, you have Uranus, who is a god that represents progress and innovation, rebellion, defiance, liberation, awakening, kind of electric and sudden and disruptive. So you have the potential for the two planets coming together to represent something like, you know, the need for change and the resistance to change. You also have the potential for there to be kind of like an eccentric and controlling quality. You have the potential for there to be almost like, almost like a punk rock mentality, where the idea of progress, change, innovation, rebellion, and disruption are held to with a kind of the bitterness and the edginess of the outsider, what do you want to call it? Like the principled and stubborn and rigid qualities of the outsider, I'm kind of getting the picture of like, you know, an in your face punk rocker, like damn the man, you know? So that kind of energy is also very Saturn Uranus. Saturn Uranus can speak when you combine them to, there's quite a variety of ways that they can combine. Really interesting. For example, in order to go forward, a Uranian principle, I'm willing to go backward. I'm willing to do something that is, it almost looks like it's contrary to the principle of change and progress. So in that sense, it could be a little Machiavellian where, the ends justify the means. Principled rebellion that may, you know, like the French Revolution, for example, or the sort of American French revolutions where it can get bloody. It can be so principled and so rigid in what it seeks that it will, it's not afraid to, break etiquette or kind of get in your face somehow. And again, like the almost like the punk rocker edginess comes to mind. This idea that if you're not with me, then you're against me. That comes to mind with this transit. If you're not with me, you're against me, especially as Mars enters Leo and starts getting into the T-square with Mars and Uranus. There's a lot of pride that can come into play. If you're not on my team, if you don't do what I do, then I cut you out, right? The Saturnine impulse to separate and divide things. You're on that side of the wall. I'm on this side of the wall. And I'm doing it because I'm strong. I have to because it's heroic. I'm building my ego upon it. I think it's what I'm doing is represents the best possible thing, you know. So like principled acts of defiance, rebellion, innovation, but with potentially kind of a rigid quality behind them, a Saturnine quality. So, you know, if you're not with me, you're against me, and the willingness to eat one's own. That is a incredibly Saturnine thing. Saturn eats his own children. So, you know, the idea of, you know, like a civil war, or like, what are those? The Hatfields and the McCoys. Wasn't that like there was like a show, and it was like a classic family feud between two families in like the old West or something like that, where it's like, you know, or like the Montagues and the Capulets, you know, where the greatest act of defiance might be between, you know, Romeo and Juliet, who say, well, I'm not going to let this family feud define my own loyalties or my own interests or something like that. So, you know, there's also this question about if you're not with me, you're against me, and then defying certain kinds of, you know, when people say, well, you should think this, or you should believe this if you're on the right side. Like, for example, in a religious group, you know, well, if you want to be a part of the religious group, then you have to condemn this behavior, or you have to take a certain stance on, I don't know what, like, you know, if you're part of the Catholic Church, you have to take a certain stance on abortion, or you have to take a certain stance on this or that. And if you don't, then, you know, you're not one of us. Or if you get a divorce, I mean, I remember this in churches growing up quite a bit. If you get a divorce, then you can no longer be a part of the church. You know, so it's like divorce is condemned in some places. So this idea of, you know, where are your loyalties? What do you stand for? And this like almost like an intolerance for a betrayal of different kinds of ideological norms that go along with a group or a family or a workplace or, you know, a mission or a vision or something like that. Old ways of doing things that no longer work. So, okay, we've done it this way a million times before and it hasn't worked. Let's try something new. And then the resistance to change that comes, that's a Saturn Uranus dynamic, or progress that's held in check by sobering realities, or something really brilliant or amazing that's held in check by a sobering reality. So for example, I have a friend of mine who's really into the mixed martial arts scene. And I was talking to him this weekend, and he was telling me that there was some, you know, some phenomenal mixed martial artist on the up and up, and he was in a fight, and unfortunately, had a dislocated bone or something like that. He like dislocated something, and so there's brilliance paused by like a sudden disruption. I'm a basketball fan, and you know, there were a few injuries in the past couple of days that are plaguing the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know if any of you all are Brooklyn Nets fans, but they're like this phenom athletes on that team. It's kind of like an all-star dream team scenario for that team. And they keep getting these crazy injuries to their star players. So it's like the rising star that kind of is being held in check. So Uranus is like fireworks. It's very dazzling and brilliant, and it can be held in check by Saturn and grounded somehow. For example, you know, my mom, right as over the weekend, I think it was, the moon was opposing Pluto, Cancer moon and opposing Pluto in Capricorn. I got a call from my mom, Mercury's retrograde, of course, too. And, you know, her flight to go and, you know, this like long awaited trip that her and her partner were going to go on, ended up getting grounded because of weather and then a mechanical delay. And, And so they got, you know, they got grounded. And I joked with her. I was like, that's karma for all the unreasonable times that you grounded me growing up. You know, she was, she was like, you know, like, well, then it'll come. You just wait until you have to ground your kids someday. So, but it was funny because I kept thinking about how much, you know, anything that there's like a lot of excitement about, and there's this feeling of like, we're taking off, you know, we're rising up. There's some revolution that's at hand, and there's some big change of circumstance. And then boom, you're met with some potential delay or setback or block or obstacle. And that can be the Saturn Uranus dynamic. It's the same exact principle that makes Saturn Uranus potentially like innovative, original, progressive, individualistic, but then kind of too principled or rigid or severe at the same time. It's the same exact combination that can take the dazzling qualities of Uranus and sort of ground them or clip their wings somehow. You can be trying to be free of something that simply will not let go. For example, I don't know, let's say that you're trying to, I've got a bunch of stuff I have to do at the DMV here in Minnesota, getting Minnesota license plates and so forth. You're like, I just want to be done with this. But then there's another requirement. I'm free. Oh my God. And then there's another requirement. It can be something as mundane and stupid as that, but it can really change your mood. And then that could carry over and you could become, you could sort of, it can spill over into the way that you handle your relationships or your work or something else. So trying to be free of something that sort of won't let go or won't let you free just yet, or is sort of delaying your gratification, intentional provocativeness, rigid defiance, a sudden breakup of structures, bones, joints, things that hold other things together, willful disrespect, using a just cause for a personal vendetta. These are all Uranus Saturn dynamics that are intensified by the belligerence and willfulness of Mars and Leo entering the mix, where, you know, my heroic will is the measure of all things. My will, you know, there's a lot of ego and pride on the line with this kind of stuff. I found myself over the weekend, for example, having to issue, a couple of apologies, basically, because I found that I was sick for one thing over the weekend. I was running a fever off and on throughout the weekend because when Mars opposed Pluto in Cancer, my oldest daughter got sick. Then 2 days later, my youngest daughter got sick. 2 days later, my wife gets sick, you know, like right in a row. And then I got sick right as all my new classes are starting. So I'm completely drained of energy over the weekend. Thankfully, I'm feeling a little bit better today. I was completely drained of energy teaching. I just didn't have my best game on Saturday and Sunday this weekend. So I was, I had to say a few apologies because there was, it's easier when your energy is low and you're not taking as good of care of yourself as you should or something like that for these energies to grab you. And right now, Mars having just ingressed into Leo, it's easy for your pride to come up and be like, well, you know, oh, you like this, or you're into that, or you feel or think differently about this, or, you know, I don't, you know, whatever, like, egoic clashes of will, and then letting pride come in and stuff like that. And, you know, it's like, it's just easier to get tangled up in that between now and like the first week of July. So I would just, you know, advise everyone, like, keep your cool. Don't let your ego, like, there might be some things, principled things that you have to make hard decisions about, or maybe even something that you do have to take a stand for, but, you know, there's ways of doing it. And hopefully we're going to talk about this in a minute it doesn't have to be like, you know, I'm going to die on the hill of this situation here because my, you know, my ego is feeling like my leonic lion pride is feeling like it's on the line here. Just be really careful of that right now. Titanic clashes of will or ego, trying to make somebody else's, you know, thing about your thing, like, really easy to do that for the next couple of weeks. Now, on the other hand, persevering through hardship and difficulty with courage, resilience, a careful, measured, strong approach to creating positive change, incremental change. This is the kind of thing where it's like, you know, slow and steady wins the race. Like, between now and, say, you know, the first week or so of July, I really feel like if you can persevere with patience, determination, take pride in your patience and the measured approach that you have to dealing with challenging choices or situations, the change that you're looking for can and will happen if you can demonstrate that you are mature enough to receive the change that wants to happen. It's a little bit like a test. There are also potential for sudden eruptions of power and intensity right now. And that power and intensity can feel like more like an affront to our very sense of dignity, you know? And so when someone comes at you and you know, I know it's really, really hard to not take things personally or to not make things about ourselves, but over at least the next few weeks, I would say that things will be a lot easier if we are very careful about that. And that's again, just because, you know, Saturn Uranus has this kind of, you know, potential for this kind of rigidity around change and revolution and the potential for things to get broken in the process. And that could be relationships, it could be jobs, it could be friendships, you know, it could be important allegiances. You know, you just want to be really careful with the way that you handle the changes that you know, how you go about creating the changes that you want to see and how you go about handling the challenges that you face. Try not to take it personally. It's really hard sometimes, but I think that's a big part of the work. So I wanted to talk a little bit about a few other things. One of the most challenging psychological dynamics of this transit, Saturn Uranus with Mars in the mix, is this idea that I am made or I am built up by what I defy. There is some sense in which the next 3 weeks could be very much about what I am not, or what I refuse to do, or what I won't do, or what I have to stand up against, or something like that. And there could be pressure from other people, family members, friends, people in your workplace who say, again, like, look, you know, what you think or feel or act or do, or what you choose in this situation, reflects on me, you know? So there's like the pressure to conform, or the pressure to, you know, or the temptation to, resist or oppose things in ways that are destructive. That's the thing I'm most concerned about. So I want to talk about this idea that I am made by what I defy, and the problem with that idea if we take it too far. There's times in life where we have to actively defy things, resist things, say no to things, negate things. That's an archetypal experience. It's not going anywhere. But here's the problem: if we try to build our egos up on what we defy, what we resist, what we are anti. I want to just tell some stories. And these are some of the things that I've learned from my, participation in the Bhakti yoga tradition, especially. So I have a bunch of family members in extended family, close family, et cetera, who have been in AA for a long time, or Al-Anon or Alateen or something like that. And one of the things that I have heard said over and over again by people in my family who have been to AA, Al-Anon, and also friends who have been through 12-step programs, is that there is a phase in the life of an addict, or the life of a family member who, you know, has another family member that's an addict or something like that, where you start to define yourself in terms of being actively against the thing that was giving you problems in the past. So for example, in the early phases of an alcoholic getting sober or clean, it's very well documented that there may be a phase that they go through where they are very actively and sometimes almost evangelically anti-drinking. And they'll really let people know. They might even become evangelical about AA or about sobriety. They might really try to talk everyone that drinks into becoming sober. And they may, for a while, their psyche, in defining its new sobriety, especially because it feels good, and especially because you feel, you know, confident, more, you know, stronger. You feel good about yourself for having made good choices, or you feel good about yourself because you feel aligned with something that's more virtuous for you personally. And so for a while, you may go through a phase where, you know, your new, it's like, you've got a new existential costume on. I'm sober. And so part of wearing that new costume, part of the growing pains, it doesn't fit you yet. And part of the way that it doesn't fit, you can tell because, you know, a person will go around trying to convert everyone to AA or 12 step, or they'll be anti-alcohol, they'll be anti-drinking or something like that. Similarly, you might have people in Al-Anon who have a family member that's drinking who may, when they realize how inappropriate the drinking is, they finally kind of come to terms with the fact that the drinking has done a lot of harm in the family. They may actually be very actively trying to convert the person in the family who's drinking. Like they could take an anti, set a boundary and now it's, you can't do this. I don't want this. Stop this. Da da da. Whereas before there might've been enabling or allowance or tolerance or no boundaries. Suddenly there's a boundary and then I resist what's on the other side of the boundary. And this is part of a process. It's very normal actually in not just in AA or getting sober, but in many areas of life. Let me tell you about some of the ones that I've been through and maybe you can relate. I don't know, but maybe you can. When my grandfather, this is a story from my own family first, actually, and then I'll tell you some of mine. When my grandfather became sober, he did it like cold turkey, right? He just quit. He became totally sober. And then he became a born-again Christian. And he was just as kind of, this is from my father, of course, and what he told me growing up with him. He was, sometimes they call it like a dry drunk. He was just as, he got better, but he was still a very severe, harsh, bullying personality, just like he was when he was drunk. But now it was toward everything that he was rejecting and trying to overcome within himself, projected out into the world, you know, like an intolerance toward the very things that he knew that he needed to overcome. A very intolerance to the very things that he was trying to work through. So as life went on, that softened a great deal, but it took many years before his new, more virtuous, healthier lifestyle and consciousness wasn't being essentially propped up by being anti his own shadows, against, actively working against his own shadows, but kind of projecting them outward. Normal. That's normal. That happens. That's just part of the process. And this is part of what Saturn is all about archetypally. And the Saturn Uranus dynamic is very much like this. When I was getting into yoga more seriously, for a while, I would get very agitated by, frustrated by, and would often actively speak out against what I didn't like or what I thought was cheapening about yoga, like people sexualizing yoga, people, you know, like Instagram photos of like, you know, people who are like half naked doing yoga poses, like sort of sexifying yoga or whatever. And it used to like really eat me up inside. And it still does sometimes, not like above, you could probably hear it in my voice right now. So when I was making a big transition in my life into yoga, I sort of actively, there was a period where I really defined that in terms of opposing what I didn't think yoga was. When I got into ayahuasca for 10 years, I started actively opposing what I felt like was a cheapening of the use of psychedelics recreationally and started, you know, sort of actively opposing that. When I was into vegetarianism or veganism at different periods in my life, when I was younger, there were periods where that was defined less by actually just embracing that lifestyle and embodying it and more by embracing it, but also very actively opposing what was on the other side of it. When I got into ancient astrology, and still to this day, I find that I'm still working through layers of not defining my interest in ancient astrology in terms of my rejection or annoyance with modern astrology. So it happens. It's like when I became a parent, I found that I was for a time, both my wife and I, for a time, we embraced the new role of parenting by being actively annoyed or agitated by people who were immature and had no idea what parenting was like. I mean, not the people who don't have parents are immature, but not the people who aren't parents are immature, but like young people out there who were maybe thinking about kids or, you know, like we found ourselves agitated by young people who did not yet understand the like adult responsibilities of parenting. And we sort of actively defined our new parenting role by opposing or being annoyed by those people. What else? I could name a million other things in my life that happened like this. I find that my, you know, like for a while when I was first starting to realize that I didn't want to be a part of Facebook, Twitter, I deactivated my Twitter account, got off Facebook last week. I have someone post my updates on Facebook now for me, so I'm not personally on there anymore. And for a while, there was a period where I felt like I needed to say a lot about why I oppose social media. Right? Same thing. So this is process. This is part of a process that is, it isn't bad, right? Because if I say, oh, don't do that, don't oppose, you know, don't oppose things, then I'm opposing opposition. It's like one of those finger traps you get at the fair when you're a kid. You try to pull out of it and you can't. So opposition is, and dualities like these are tensions built into nature. And there's something but you know, and Carl Jung said this, and many great archetypal psychologists have said this, that when we come to progressively, as we individuate, we become more and more ensouled. The soul is the meeting ground for the opposites, for their play, for their interaction, for their tension, for their oppositions, for their harmonies. It's the meeting ground for all of the different ways that opposites can interact, play, fight, battle, oppose, you know, all of it. And the more that we individuate, the more that we come to realize that who we are is not fundamentally something that is defined by its opposition to someone or something else. It is whole and complete unto itself. Actually, let me read you something. I'll go get something really quick. That's my closet, my book closet. I made a closet into a bookshelf. Listen to this description in the Sri Isha Upanishad, one of the ancient Upanishads. This is the invocation to the Sri Isha Upanishad. I'll chant it for you. Om Purnam Araha Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasha Purnam Adaya Purnameva Vashishyate. I apologize. My Sanskrit isn't the greatest here, but the personality of Godhead is perfect and complete. And because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as a complete whole. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete by itself. And because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. So that's how we are as spirit souls. We're called jivas. We're little whole complete units. And as we grow, part of how we come to realize our wholeness is through this kind of identifying and tangling with duality. And we can understand it very gracefully. Like if we didn't have it, it would be very hard to grow. So it's actually very merciful that we have such dualities to tangle with. And yet as we continue to tangle with them, a non-oppositional, a kind of a non-binary identity that is beyond, all of the temporary material designations of body and that occupy our temporary world, even as we continue to participate in them, starts to emerge. And one of the symptoms of that, we say in Bhakti Yoga, is that it's just like the way that you'll settle in after a while. If you're someone who's gotten, let's say, sober. I was a opiate addict in my early 20s, so I can relate to this. You slowly settle into your sobriety in a state that is no longer about opposing someone or something else. Your sobriety is something that you've settled into. So it no longer, and the same thing is true for parenting. As I grow in parenting, as we age, as we develop, we develop tolerance and patience so it's like an earlier developmental stage in some ways that we're at, where we have to, define what we are by actively opposing something else. It's not bad to do so. It's part of a process, spiritual process, that's built into the fabric of reality. We have to be so careful about it, because the danger of it is this. In Bhakti, we say that the path of negation is ultimately an impersonal path, because in order to prop ourselves up, we negate anything and everything that isn't good or holy or somehow in alignment with how we are conceptualizing ourselves. And the idea behind that is that some pure, final, perfect state of self or reality exists if we can negate everything that isn't pure, holy, godlike, perfect intensely enough for long enough, then we'll reach this kind of pure state. But in bhakti, the goal is to see the divine in everyone and in everything, even in the process of going through trying to prop ourselves up by opposing someone or something. Even that is still something that we have to learn how to see God in. I have to be patient with the fact that there's going to be periods of time in my life where, as I'm learning ancient astrology and I'm annoyed, I might be more annoyed with modern astrology. As I'm, becoming a vegetarian, I might be annoyed with people who kill animals or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like I have to have patience for even the fact that that exists, that that is a part of the world. That's a part of how growth happens. So in order to see the divine in everyone and everything, the principles that we cultivate, that we keep coming back to, are empathy, understanding, forgiveness, compassion, patience, tolerance, curiosity. And this personalizes things. There's no longer anyone or anything that's outside of the sphere of love. It's harder to negate things, because when you act and behave this way, you're essentially looking at an ensouled reality rather than a conceptual reality that you're trying to sort through proper assertions and negations. When we personalize things, it's harder to negate things, because it's harder to negate a being, a person, a soul, a conscious entity. It's harder to negate a conscious being or entity than it is to negate a concept that we have about an entity, or that we have about ourselves, or that we have about someone or something else. So in bhakti, we say that, love begins with the practice of saying yes, welcoming things in, even difficult things, seeking to understand, to forgive, to learn, to see our own shortcomings, to see our own hypocrisy, to see our own double standards in those people or things that we are most tempted, even feel most justified to want to negate. We keep personalizing. We keep relating. We see reality as relational. We're not looking for a final state that has been reached through negating all of the false things. We're looking for the state of love that already is, that we are trying to open ourselves to. And doing this in bhakti, we say, helps bring out the best in ourselves and in others. So it also is purifying along the way. So anyway, I'm saying all of this because I need a reminder that it's going to be natural for me at times to want to think of what makes me good or great in terms of what I resist or reject. It's also natural for me to go through a process like that as I'm growing, and I have to have patience for that process too. So I hope that you can resonate with this. I'm sure that you guys, anyone who's parents, I feel like, man, for me right now, I'm in like parenting classroom in life. And I feel like that's been such a part of parenting, has been moving as an early parent from resisting behavior that I didn't like and trying to define good behavior in terms of resisting or opposing my child's bad behavior, and gradually moving into a space of not resisting, rejecting, or drawing those hard oppositions as much. In order to do that, I've also had to have mercy and grace on myself for needing to grow and learn and evolve as a parent. So anyway, I'm rambling on now. I hope this was useful for you guys. I hope that you have lots of good laughs and good times and good lessons over the next 3 or 4 weeks. We'll visit this again for sure in the upcoming weeks to come, because it's going to be I'm sure it'll be a more intense transit. So that's what I've got for today. Hope you guys are doing well, and we will see you again next time. Bye, everyone.